Good morning, I'm Sam Fuqua. Coming up after our state and local news, the Boulder City Council discussed homelessness last night, including encampments for unhoused people. We'll hear a report from Roz Brown. And on this historic day, when a biracial woman becomes vice president of the United States, the Women's March Denver is holding an interactive online event. KGNU's Miriam Schiff talks with one of the organizers. We have our regular Wednesday features for you, Make Them Hear You, and Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars. We'll check in with the BBC again at 8:30 and then commentary from Jim Hightower. On Good Old CU this morning, Joe Uhaus looks at how we design cities. At 9 o'clock, we'll join Pacifica's live coverage of the presidential inauguration, featuring progressive voices and perspectives. And our day of diverse music begins, as always, at 9:30 with the Morning Sound Alternative. The inauguration coverage will continue in its entirety online via the KGNU2 stream, which you can get at kgnu.org and on our mobile player. All that still ahead this morning on listener-supported community radio. We begin with headlines from Jamie Sudler.
Yesterday, Governor Jared Polis expressed his frustration and recognized everyone's frustration over the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine. But he said he remains confident that anyone over 70 who wants the vaccine will be able to get it by the end of February. Polis said that Colorado is not getting enough vaccine from the federal government anywhere in the state, and said it could use 3 to 5 times as much vaccine each week with its current distribution infrastructure. Nine News reports that the governor sent a letter this week directing all providers to hand out all the vaccines they have on hand instead of holding back for a second dose. This will result in more people getting their first dose this week. It's still unclear when the state will open up vaccinations to those age 65 and older. Polis said it depends on the supply. Polis said he has spoken with the incoming Biden administration to express his concern about the vaccine supply chain and getting information about it sooner. He said it's difficult for hospitals and other providers to plan without more than the 3 or 4 days' notice they have received under the Trump administration. Polis and both Colorado senators announced yesterday that the state will receive almost $200 million from a federal emergency management agency program to support the state's COVID-19 testing sites. Senator Michael Bennett said that the funding will help the governor and local health agencies meet testing needs. Colorado took part in the National Memorial to Lives Lost to COVID-19 yesterday afternoon. The Denver City and County building was lit up in amber tones as bells rang to honor and remember those who have died from the virus. Those who have lost family members were asked to light a candle. Colorado Politics reports that cities around the country participated in the ceremony, including Washington, D.C., which featured a lighting at the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool and several live-streamed speakers. Boulder County recorded 10 new coronavirus deaths yesterday and 89 new cases. Of those cases, CU Boulder showed 14 positive results during testing on Monday. Meanwhile, the university made a presentation to Boulder City Council last night about expectations for the spring semester. CU had already announced it would start the semester 3 days later on January 14th and cancel the traditional spring break, instead spreading out days off for students in an effort to curb the spread of the travel-related coronavirus infections. CU's chief operating officer, Pat O'Rourke, also said CU plans to respond when students don't comply with the rules.
As you know, we unfortunately had to suspend students last semester for behaviors that were inconsistent with public health orders and the community health. We don't take those actions lightly, and we want nothing more than for our students to be able to succeed, but we do need them to abide by public health requirements. We know that there will be instances where students don't meet our expectation, and we're working with the Boulder Police Department, the CUPD, as well as student conduct to respond whenever we're learning of those behaviors that pose a risk to the community.
O'Rourke said that CU has been asked to be a distribution point for vaccines when they're available, but noted that the university has so far received very little number of vaccines for healthcare workers. In good news, Boulder County reported that in the past week, public health officials have seen a decline in the 5-day average of new COVID-19 cases. Governor Polis said he will issue an executive order activating the Colorado National Guard to help respond to any potential violence that might arise during President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration today. The order follows a warning by the FBI of plans for armed demonstrations in all 50 state capitals leading to Biden's swearing in. Polis said that our democracy there preserves the sacred right to free speech, but it does not enable or facilitate the perpetuation of violence or destruction. According to the governor, state officials are not aware of any specific threat to Colorado beyond the FBI's earlier warning to states. The Denver Post reports that the Colorado State Patrol, the Denver Police Department, and other police agencies will provide security at the state capitol. Denver police also took to social media Tuesday to remind people that it's illegal to openly carry firearms in the city. Violators will be subject to arrest in the department said on Twitter. Xcel Energy wants to charge its Colorado customers almost $600 million during the next 5 years to reduce their risk of causing wildfires. Xcel's subsidiary, Public Service Company of Colorado, has cited the catastrophic wildfires in California, started by Pacific Gas and Electric, as motivation for the proposal. Xcel is asking its 1.5 million customers in the state to pay for the work with a monthly fee on their bills. But the Colorado Sun reports that consumer advocates aren't buying it. While the cost is relatively small, less than 1% of a bill's monthly total, they say Xcel should spread out some of the financial risk for the work to shareholders and not just customers, especially during an unstable economy. A Public Utilities Commission judge is expected to make a recommendation to the commission on the proposal. Today's weather will be sunny and windy, with gusts as high as 50 miles per hour and a high near 56. A high wind warning and a burn ban are in effect for Boulder County's high elevations throughout today. Tomorrow, partly sunny with the highs around 50. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
Eight now at listener-supported community radio. Well, the city of Boulder is struggling to manage an increase in homeless encampments since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. KGNU's Roz Brown says Boulder City Council discussed multiple solutions last night.
When the pandemic hit last March, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention cautioned against clearing homeless encampments because it could increase the potential for spreading the disease. At the same time, many homeless shelters closed or reduced the number of unhoused they accept, while the economic crisis has led to evictions, putting more people on the streets. Boulder continues to enforce its ban on camping, a policy that primarily impacts those experiencing homelessness, and has continued clearing encampments. During virtual public comment at last night's Boulder City Council meeting, Emma Goldman shared a personal story when a sweep followed a recent snowstorm.
Just last week, an unhoused friend of mine who is paralyzed and wheelchair-bound had frostbite for 2 weeks because she was afraid to leave her tent because all of her things might be thrown away. Less than 24 hours after going to the hospital to have her toes removed for frostbite because her body started to die in the snow, all of her things were thrown away by the police.
City Council debated staff recommendations that encourage spending more than $1 million to maintain safe and welcoming public spaces, a recommendation that includes mandatory minimum sentences for homeless campers and increased police presence. Daniel Katz and Olivia Booth spoke against it.
Further criminalizing homelessness cannot hope to solve the problem. Increasing the number of cops will not reduce the number of unhoused people. The only purpose of this plan is to push people experiencing homelessness out of sight so that you don't have to feel uncomfortable.
Maybe instead of complaining about the quote-unquote waste and quote-unquote crimes committed by the unhoused, why don't you address the actual roots of these problems, which is almost always poverty, racial injustice, and or mental health issues.
Other Boulder residents, including George Boone and Wendy Ferrara, were supportive of recommendations that address the problem.
I'm thankful to live in a community with strong values around our homeless and a robust housing first strategy that produced results over the past years. That said, over the course of the past several years, and past 2 years in particular, we've seen a marked increase in crime, along with trash, biohazards, fire hazards, meth use, camps in our public spaces, bike paths, and community hubs that has gotten to the point where all of us actively avoid these areas.
As a 25-plus-year resident of Boulder and a mother of a 10- and 14-year-old, I wanted to focus on one issue, fear. Boulder has changed a lot in 25 years, some changes for the good, some not. But I've yet to meet a person who feels that feeling unsafe is a good thing.
After public comments, City Council heard from its police chief, Maris Harold. Harold said fear about the encampments is a very real thing because the rate of crime in Boulder has skyrocketed since the pandemic began last year. Harold said encampments are entrenched in certain parts of the city, with some cleaned by police officers more than 20 times in 2020. She described a recent cleanup under the library along Boulder Creek.
City staff and private contractors found over 1,000 needles at this one location. They cleared 900 pounds of trash. They cleared 15 to 20 tents that were removed. This work required the dedication of 10 hours of police officer time. And that was actually 11 officers, one sergeant, and one commander to manage this cleanup process at this one site last week.
Both the police and city council have received hundreds of complaints about the homeless encampments. But as council members Rachel Friend and Judy Joseph noted, the unhoused are disproportionately affected by crime, including homicides, assaults, and robberies.
In a lot of emails that we get, we have a lot of people blaming unhoused people for every crime. And we judge one unhoused person based on the acts of another unhoused person. We saw that people who are homeless are often victimized and traumatized at higher rates. So I want us to be careful not to add our own hatred or intolerance to that burden.
Until our entire community is safe and secured, other parts of the community will feel the insecurity as well. This idea of justice and social justice is that if you have people who are highly marginalized in a community, it's going to be very hard to have a very secured community.
In addition to a new police unit downtown, recommendations include continuing the camping ban and removal of encampments and building residential recovery options for methamphetamine users. But Councilman Aaron Brockett was quick to point out it would not be enough.
I think we all recognize that we as a city don't have the resources to address these problems in the way that they deserve to be addressed. And so this is about working with the state legislature and other governments around the region to try to come up with some shared solutions that can tap into more resources than we have available locally to try to get as many people housed and needs met as possible.
No votes were taken last night, and council will continue its discussions at a future date. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
It's 8:16 at listener-supported community radio. Instead of marching this year, the Women's March Denver is hosting an interactive online event today. Miriam Schiff spoke with one of the organizers of today's program.
Today at 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, we will be sharing a historical moment, the inauguration of Kamala Harris as Vice President of the United States. This holds many firsts. She will be the first United States female Vice President. She will be the first African American and the first Asian American Vice President. Joining me today is Susie Chuckman on the Board of Directors of the Women's March Denver. In lieu of their annual march, they will be hosting a virtual interactive event today to celebrate the community through art and their digital motivational bureau. Susie, tell us how this event is complementing today's history.
It is such a historic day and a day that we should be embracing and celebrating women, women of color, and future generations that'll go on to do great things. Traditionally, we are a marching organization. So what are we doing instead of marching? Out of an abundance of caution, we understand attending large public events is just not feasible. And we do want to provide a way for our diverse communities here in the Denver region to still come together today and to celebrate this historic moment. We have devised a way to do that through what we're calling our motivation mural. The motivation mural will be an online all-day digital campaign. So it's not another Zoom meeting. It's not another presentation online, but it's a very interactive way for our community to connect. And what we're asking is folks to express what is keeping them motivated. Are you motivated by seeing Kamala Harris become elected the first female person of color as our Vice President of the United States? What motivates you to move forward in 2021? Because we know that this is just the tip of the iceberg. We have so much more work to do.
How do people sign up for it to become part of this? What is the time frame that you're doing? How do people get in touch with being able to be part of this wonderful event?
Absolutely. So this will be an all-day event hosted by Women's March Denver. There are a few ways you can get involved. One would be going directly to our website at womensmarchdenver.org, or visiting any of our social media platforms that include our Facebook page, our Instagram page, and our Twitter account, and you'll be redirected back to our website. The Mural software platform will allow our participants to upload pictures of past marches, pictures of their posters that they've carried with them in the streets of Denver. It will also allow them to post a digital post-it to the board to answer the questions of what's your 2021 motivation and what motivates you to keep moving forward with the important work we have to do to build more equity in our community.
Will the art and digital mural be archived on your website?
We will find a way to capture all of the contributions to the mural, whether it will remain and exist in that platform. We're not sure. We're open to exploring working with local artists to embody that work and to also help us drive our motivation for moving forward as a local nonprofit organization in 2021. We really hope to hear how we can best serve the community and what they're looking for as far as our next steps and what do they expect from us as leaders in that process.
When you say it's a community through art, is it only visual art? Can people speak about what they're going to do? How can they present it?
Great question. It is essentially, if we were all in a classroom, it's a giant whiteboard, a giant poster board. So anything two-dimensional is recommended to be posted there, such as past photos, if there's poems, if there's specific quotes that really motivate you, or just your general thoughts of how you're feeling around being motivated to keep marching, to keep moving forward. We recommend posting those insights.
And I'm sure also that we can include our children in doing this as well, in contributing stories or drawings, or we've had children be part of the previous marches as well. I'd like to invite our audience, please, and invite your grandbabies and your teen grandchildren and your children to be part of this. What time is it starting?
We'll have the mural open from 8 a.m. until 10 p.m. And throughout the day, we'll be going in and snagging some great insights, some really poignant pieces to share out on our social media as we're all witnessing history be made tomorrow. It's going to be a great way for us to have an interaction like we haven't had in the past as we've been in our little COVID bubbles. It's hard to believe that the last march was a whole year ago and all of the work that's gone into the past marches, but we're very excited to start meeting people where they're at, whether they're working three different jobs and they've got kids at home and they're working online or they're working out of the home and they're now a teacher and cleaner and all of these different roles that we know women and especially women of color have had to embrace over this incredibly complicated and difficult year. That's why we're really proud to bring something as close to home as we can for them.
Thank you for joining us today. Again, you can be part of this digital art and motivational mural by going to their website, which is womensmarchdenver.org. You can go on their Facebook page, Twitter page, and their Instagram page. Thank you again, Susie, for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Miriam.
And thanks to KGNU's Miriam Schiff for that report. 22 minutes after 8 now at listener-supported KGNU.
From Washington, D.C. to Hong Kong, civil resistance movements are erupting. To what effect? On the next edition of Alternative Radio, hear Erica Chanoweth on civil resistance in the 21st century. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday evenings at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Sunny skies today with temperatures reaching the mid to upper 50s along the Front Range of Colorado. Up next, a regular Wednesday feature here on the magazine, it's Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. President-elect Joe Biden plans an aspirational inauguration speech, a legislative package for coronavirus recovery, and a flurry of executive orders designed to signal an immediate break from President Trump. Here are some highlights. Some will require Congress to enact. On his own, Biden is immediately returning the United States to the Paris Climate Accords and repealing the ban on U.S. entry for citizens of some majority Muslim countries. He will sign an order extending nationwide restrictions on evictions and foreclosures and implement a mask mandate on federal property. Then, over 10 days, he'll sign executive orders to help high schools reopen, expand coronavirus testing, and establish clearer public health standards. He'll restore federal workers' right to unionize and issue new sweeping ethics standards that would apply to his own administration. He also said he would ensure that transgender students can have access to sports, restrooms, and locker rooms. He also has already announced 44 nominees that need Senate confirmation. Quote, "Day one, if I win, I'm going to be on the phone with our NATO allies saying we're back and you can count on us again." He'll send a bill to Congress repealing liability protections for gun manufacturers and vowed to eliminate Trump tax cuts. Quote, "Right now, the president gives advantage to companies that go overseas and invest overseas by reducing the taxes they have to pay. I would double that tax." Biden also immediately sent to Congress several pieces of legislation, including a sweeping immigration bill and his most urgent legislation, a $1.9 trillion economic stabilization plan. When Republicans resist, Biden may make use of his executive powers and seek elimination of a Senate filibuster. For COVID, Biden will loosen the restrictions on who can get vaccinated and when, set up many more sites where vaccinations can take place, mobilize more medical personnel to deliver the vaccinations, and use the might of the federal government to increase the vaccine supply by manufacturing whatever is needed, whenever it is needed, to accelerate the effort. He promises rapid testing for asymptomatic individuals who work in high-risk settings and setting up genomic surveillance so we can see when and how the virus is mutating. Then there's $130 billion intended to retrofit schools so they can operate safely. Reproductive rights advocates expect Biden to overturn Trump-era rulings, like banning federal funds for foreign and national health organizations who mention abortion. The Title X program will be able to refer patients to abortion providers. The contraceptive coverage mandate will return. The Hyde Amendment limiting abortion funding will be reconsidered. So if you have thoughts on which of these many issues you would like to see prioritized or eliminated, you can contact your representative or senators. This is Chris Spohr with Make Them Hear You.
Good morning. Welcome to Naturally.
This is Brigitte Mars to talk about a timely herb, and that is oregano, Origanum species. It's very, very similar to marjoram. They are both, marjoram and oregano, in the mint or Lamiaceae family. The genus name Origanum, as well as the common name oregano, come from the Greek words oris and ganos, meaning joy of the mountain, because the plant is so beautiful with these awesome purple flowers and grows around the Mediterranean. And couples, when they were engaged to each other, would often wear a crown of oregano to show their gladness and joy. Well, oregano is a wonderful herb for our lungs. It is anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, antiseptic. It releases, relaxes spasms, so we call it an antispasmodic. It's good for digestion, good for the liver. It's a digestive aid, and it helps to break up mucus in the lungs. It's really rich in essential oils, so it's a wonderful herb to use because of the antimicrobial properties of those essential oils. I think it's a wonderful herb for the respiratory system, but it also increases circulation of the digestive tract. It has been used, of course, as most of these herbs, by millions of people for thousands of years for respiratory disorders like asthma and bronchitis, fever, headache, high cholesterol, pleurisy, rheumatism, tonsillitis. You can find oregano oil at the health food stores, and you may not like this, but I actually bite into the capsules because I think when you taste it, you feel this amazing sensation of it clearing your head, your sinuses, but you may not like it. But I find that that's a very potent way to help relieve a cough, a cold, congestion, But of course, oregano is a wonderful culinary herb. It loses a lot of its aromatic qualities when it's heated. So if you're making something like spaghetti or pizza, you might want to add some in the beginning when you're making your sauce and then add some at the end. It's an easy plant to grow here. So you could get some seedlings because it's not that easy to grow from seed, but it will reward you with a wonderful antimicrobial herb that you can add to your salads. Also, having it in the garden repels ants. And in folkloric traditions, it's been used in love spells. And when carried, is said to intensify love, increase prosperity, and give protection against sickness. What more could we ask for? Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
You can hear Naturally with local herbalist Brigitte Mars every Wednesday morning here on the KGNU Morning Magazine.